Hi, this is Joe Levine with a podcast introduction for teachers to Chapter 5, Populations. This chapter can be challenging for students who don't like math. I have found that students sometimes respond if they can see how population growth and interconnections among species affect organisms and environments they can relate to. So here's a story that does all these things and also shows the scientific method in action. The tale of European gypsy moths in America began in 1869, when a few were accidentally released near Boston. Those moths promptly began reproducing, and with no natural predators or diseases, their populations grew exponentially. In no time, they were munching their way west and south, spreading to 17 states and the District of Columbia. Gypsy moth caterpillars are voracious. They prefer to eat oak leaves, but will eat 500 other kinds of plants if they're hungry. Roughly every 10 years, their population explodes and they devour thousands of acres of forests. In some suburbs, they form a blanket that can cover the ground. If you live in a gypsy moth area, some students' parents might remember a recent outbreak. They could tell stories about walking on blankets of mushy caterpillars covering sidewalks or having to sweep them off car windshields in the morning. But any population that grows so much is bound to cause changes in other populations. And here's where the story gets really interesting. Because researchers studying gypsy moth cycles have uncovered curious and unexpected connections among gypsy moths, oak trees, deer, deer mice, and, have you guessed yet, Lyme disease. What? How could Lyme disease be related to gypsy moths? Here's the scoop as we understand it today. First, consider interactions between gypsy moths and oak trees. When gypsy moth numbers are low, oak trees grow well and can produce large numbers of acorns. As it turns out, oak trees don't typically bear the same size crop of acorns every year. Roughly every 2 to 5 years, all oak trees in an area produce a bumper crop. That's what biologists call masting. Now, our native white-footed mice love eating acorns. So mouse populations increase in the year immediately following a masting. Why? Because acorns are easily stored over the winter. And when there are lots of acorns around, the extra food improves rodents' chances of surviving winter in good enough condition to breed early and often the following summer. And here's where the story gets really interesting. Researchers learned that since the introduction of gypsy moths, mice have discovered that moth pupae and their eggs are almost as tasty as acorns. So the mice now prey on those pupae and eggs. But how much? Is mouse predation a significant drag on moth population growth? These observations and questions led to an hypothesis. Researchers hypothesized that a big mouse population might eat enough gypsy moth pupae to check the growth of moth populations. They tested this hypothesis using an experiment in a forest in upstate New York. First, they set up control plots and experimental plots. From three experimental plots, they removed as many mice as possible. No mice were removed from control plots. They then compared survival rates of moth pupae in experimental and control areas. By the way, researchers confirmed that mice were eating the pupae in a very clever way. They attached freeze-dried moth pupae to wax backgrounds that they then planted in the plots. The wax picked up identifiable mouth tooth marks as the animals grabbed the larvae and pupae and enjoyed their meals. Now, what did the data look like? Well, roughly 45 times more moth pupae and egg masses survived in experimental plots from which mice had been removed. These data supported the hypothesis that mice had become important predators on moth pupae. Then, the researchers enlisted the help of local Girl Scouts, who spread 4 tons of extra acorns on experimental plots to simulate masting. Not surprisingly, mouse populations in those plots soon soared. And then two things happened. First, the extra acorns attracted mice from surrounding areas. In other words, mice immigrated into masting woods. Then, the acorns supported high rates of mouse population growth. Those mouse populations proceeded to prey heavily on gypsy moth pupae. And that predation was intense enough to help keep gypsy moths under control for a time. Because sooner or later, food did begin to run short. When that happened, mice emigrated from the oak woods and the mouse population crashed. But the researchers were observant enough to notice something else, too. They knew that mice are hosts for the ticks that carry Lyme disease. So researchers also kept track of the number of ticks in experimental and control plots. What they found was striking. The summer after the artificial masting, acorn-enriched plots contained roughly 8 times more ticks than the other plots. Now, how did that happen? Increases in mouse populations alone would not necessarily lead to increases in tick population. Why? Because mice are hosts mainly for juvenile ticks. Ticks that are old enough to reproduce generally live on deer, not mice. Yet data showed that mice in acorn-rich plots carried 40% more tick larvae than those in other plots. What was going on? Remember how masting lured mice into acorn-rich areas? Well, bumper acorn crops convince deer to immigrate into oak woods, too. Those deer bring along adult deer ticks, whose offspring infest more mice. And that's not all. Mice are a main reservoir of the parasites that cause Lyme disease. So here's a case where populations of 2 different parasites, ticks and spirochetes, are increased by higher host population densities. As a result of this cycle, the number of mature ticks that can bite and infect humans, or pets, with Lyme disease increases. And as human populations increase and spread out into woodsy suburbs and recreation areas, more and more humans are likely to contract Lyme disease. Hope you enjoy this chapter.